Okay, thank you, Jan, and good morning, everyone. It's nice to see familiar faces for a change or for a long time. First of all, I would like to thank the selection committee, of course, for giving me the opportunity to present my work here today. I'm going to talk about multiple parasite infections, and within the next 20 minutes or so, I'm going to show you that they matter not only for the ecology and evolution and prevention of diseases, but they matter for all of us. Species interactions, they have a key role in biological sciences. Whether we are talking about predator-prey interactions, host parasites, mutualism, or interactions between organisms and their environment, such as pollutants, these interactions have traditionally been approached from the perspective of single pairwise species interactions. This has been necessary from the perspective of experimental research, of course, to control all confounding factors, but they typically also give a simplistic view of the nature complexity, which often looks something like this, which we see from the food web studies. For example, there are multiple players in these interactive setups and making these things much more complicated. Of course, this kind of a complexity cannot be tackled entirely with experimental approaches, but we can approach this complexity now with small steps because of recent developments in analytical methods and also combining expertise from different research groups working on different areas. So I work with diseases, parasitic diseases, which have, of course, influenced humankind throughout the history, such as the plague here. And then most recently, of course, we all know that the COVID-19 virus has hit mankind and influenced basically everything, even the seating arrangements in this room. But we also know that the diseases are not an exception. They also interact, and they form communities so that the hosts are infected with multiple parasites and diseases at the same time. I always like to use this example of a roach from the nearby lake, which can be infected up to 40 different species of parasites that excludes viruses and bacteria. So there's an interactive community within the hosts influencing all kinds of features of parasite transmission and influence on the host. So it's quite well established from papers from the last 30 years or so, mostly theoretically, that first of all, diseases and disease-causing agents, they interact, and it has a significant influence on some of the key parasite traits, such as virulence, which means the harm caused to the host. But what is really lacking even today, or it's lacking behind, it's the empirical data. So this is mostly theoretical research still. And in my own research, I have worked quite a bit on trematode parasites, and we have shown, for example, here on the left, that if we take genotypes of one parasite species, we compare single infections, and then combine these genotypes in different proportions, we get a higher infection success, showing that those parasites are interacting together to facilitate their infection success. So it's not about competition only, but it can also result in facilitation of infections. We see similar interactions between closely related species. For example, if we compare the infection success of a single infection here in yellow, and that same genotype co-infected to the same host with four other genotypes of the different species, we get either increase in infection success or decrease or something in between, depending on the interacting genotypes. So recently, we joined forces with Lotta-Riina Sundberg's group to study this even further, using totally phylogenetically distant parasite species, such as the Flavobacterium and the same flukes we have always used, and we put them together to co-infect the host. And what we found, first of all, that the observed virulence harm to the host was clearly higher than the expected virulence. And there was also quite a high variation between different genotype strain combinations in the outcome of the disease. So what this shows that the, if we think about back to that figure of the roach, it's the entire community of infections that it's interacting at the same time. So it's not limited to those that are infecting the same site in the host or sharing the same resources, but it's the entire community of infection that is interacting at the same time. But because of spatial temporal variation in the nature, many of these infections, they do not occur simultaneously. So all the previous examples were such that where we put the two parasites at the same time to the host. But this spatial temporal variation causes or results in a situation that one parasite can infect the host first, followed by others. And this has significant consequences for ecology and evolution of diseases, like we recently reviewed with Jukka and Anna-Liisa in this paper. So if we think about animal life cycles, it doesn't matter if it's a mammal or a fish, there's only a fraction of their life that they are spending uninfected after birth. And after that, they start to accumulate infections, which will then influence their entire life cycle later on. But if we look at the research on multiple parasite infections, it looks something like this. So there's a number of studies. The most of the studies have been focusing on simultaneous infections from strains of one species or strains of different species, whereas these kind of sequential infections where they follow each other, it has received relatively little attention. But if we consider the likelihood in nature, it's quite the opposite. So these sequential infections are actually more common than these simultaneous infections. So there's a fairly large research bias towards conditions that are actually quite rare in nature. And identifying these kind of research biases or research gaps, it can really make a difference. In my own research, we basically repeated that facilitation experiment you saw just a few moments ago, where we combined those genotypes in different proportions. And in this experiment, we also see very nice increase in infection success with the evenness of the combination of the genotypes. But if these hosts have a previous infection from the same parasite, that the effect is completely eroded. So it shows that once the host is immunized or pre-adapted to the infection, there is no such facilitation. And this can have significant implications for parasite transmission evolution and also evolution of virulence. And we see a similar effect also with these distant parasite species like flukes and bacteria. If we sequence the infection so that they receive the flukes first and the bacteria like 4 hours later, we see a very dramatic increase in the survival of the fish. So it really matters, the sequence and the timing between the infection for infection success and also virulence of those diseases. So this relates also to COVID-19, so that there has been speculations that's part of the variation, at least in those symptoms of the COVID-19, might be related to other coronavirus infection in the population. But at the moment, it's completely unknown if this is true or not. And we have similar black boxes, if you like, in these type of environments, intensive production farming units, where there's effective disease transmission because of very high host densities and such. But we really don't know what is the effect of previous infections. We just responded with using staggering amounts of antibiotics and antimicrobials to fight off the diseases. Well, that has been the solution, but it's coming to an end, as you all know, that the antibiotic resistance is becoming more and more prevalent. So in the aquaculture facilities, we know from long time series that these infections, they are dynamic. So this is the prevalence of tanks being infected in a tank versus time, and there are many disease-causing agents going through these facilities. And in addition, each of these, they have specific timing within one season. And this causes that these hosts are becoming sequentially exposed to different parasites and pathogens within the season and also between the years. So consecutive disease epidemics that can influence the subsequent ones. But nevertheless, they tend to treat the diseases without any consideration of previous or other existing infections. We modeled this sequential infection experiment with flukes and bacteria with Professor Andy Fenton from Liverpool. And we show that if we just slightly introduce these flukes into that system, it can really protect the host population so that up to 95% of the population may be surviving from the bacterial attack if they have a previous experience from the other parasite. So it shows that it really matters, or it should be considered if this fish or any other host, if they have previous or existing other infections. And this guy could also underlie the failures in management practices and medical intervention, but it's completely still mostly unknown. So recently we have been interested also in microbiomes and their role in disease dynamics. So we have a few papers published on this called so-called enriched rearing in aquaculture, where they introduce structures in the fish tanks to increase the habitat complexity, to make it more, a little bit more like natural instead of a just empty tank. And then most recently, these are unpublished data. We have manipulated not only the number of enrichments, but also their quality. And this is the proportional mortality occurring in those tanks. And as you can see, if we introduce some stones in the tank, it already decreases the mortality. But if these fish stones have been conditioned in lake water previously, we see like something like 50% reduction already in mortality. So imagine if we could just put a handful of stones in a fish tank. And that could take out the disease without any medication. That's really, really intriguing idea. So this conditioning effect of stones, previous conditioning in lake water, it really points strongly towards the operation of microbiomes or biofilms on those stones. And these are very recent results from our group done by Rocky, where we compare the gut microbiome and especially these flavobacterial numbers in or abundance in the fish gut in those different environments. And it clearly shows that there's in these enriched environments, the fish have fewer bacteria compared to these standard tanks, which are completely empty. So this is really promising leads to carry on this research. So one peculiar feature of host-parasite interactions is that the environment of the parasite it's also a living organism. So it's because of these all kinds of different harmful effects that parasites and disease are causing, the host will fight back. And we have recently shown that they not only can avoid being infected, they can resist the infection with immunological resistance. And they can also tolerate the infection so that they just repair the damages instead of attacking the infection itself. And there are interesting associations between these different defense traits. And the next step is to ask if there's any role of host microbiome in this as well. So it basically it combines the outer or outside environment of the host and also the inside world of the same host together, and basically adds more players into these interactive setups. And we have also been interested in seeing that if there's a genetic basis to resistance against parasites, so that we were involved in a project where Saimaa landlocked salmon were hybridized with the Atlantic populations. And we compared these populations so that we infected them with the flavobacterium and then also with these iflukes. And we found out that this, first of all, hybridizing this very susceptible Saimaa landlocked salmon with the more resistant Tornio stock, it increases the survival quite a bit. But interestingly, I mean, when we did the same thing with the other parasite, the result was totally opposite. So that the higher resistance of this landlocked salmon, it came down. So this not only shows that there's a genetic basis to resistance against different parasites, but also that it has a conservation biology aspect to this, because it has been suggested that this type of genetic rescue could be used in saving these very highly endangered populations. So it should be considered also from this perspective. And quite recently we have been working with Greg Brimmer's group from Helsinki, who showed a few years ago in this paper that the large part of the variation in age of maturity in Atlantic salmon is explained by this VGLL3 gene. And what we have done is that we have had Atlantic salmon in Kainuu Fisheries Research Institute, which have different background of VGLL3 gene. And these fish have been individually tagged, put into these semi-natural tanks where they can feed on their own. Their maturation-related migration life history traits can be followed with these bit antennas individually over time. And what is our interest in this, that we have infected half of the fish with these iflukes, which influences the eyesight of the fish because it causes cataracts. And there are very, very interesting questions, such as, is the age of maturity related to the resistance in this fish? For example, those that are residing longer in the freshwater, do they invest more in the defense against freshwater parasites? And also, does the infection in the eye, could it override the effect of this VGLL3 gene? These are really, really interesting questions. I simply can't really wait to see what the outcome is that once my associate Ines Klemme will finalize the analysis. For the last few minutes, I would like to focus on another topic, turning the table around, so to speak, and ask if parasite diversity could also explain the diversity of their hosts. And we reviewed this idea with Ulla Seausen from Switzerland a few years ago, and basically went through some of the mechanisms that could be explaining why parasites could promote the diversity of hosts. But without going any further details, I'm just describing some of the system I've been working with to address this question. For example, the cichlid adaptive radiation in the Lake Victoria and also some Swiss population of whitefish. And these are really fantastic systems because they represent maybe one of the best adaptive radiation systems in the world. And what we have shown that these infections, they differ. And this kind of a speciation continuum where you have species from very early stages to already to those species birds that have already completed their speciation process, you can ask questions at which stage of the process these infections they become divergent. And I'm currently also conducting some experimental work with the Arctic char in Iceland to address this kind of a hybridization issue, if the hybrids between the morphs have higher susceptibility to infections. And there are also very interesting sidetracks to this approach. There are a few papers from Ulla Seehausen recently where they have shown that the eutrophication of waters can actually reverse the speciation process. And it's intriguing to ask if the parasites could do the same. For example, if eutrophication is making the sexual selection or relaxing the sexual selection in the fish. If, for example, if infections in the eye could do the same. And ask, do we see adaptive radiations in populations where the infection pressure is lower? And we don't know, we don't see anything in those populations where it's higher. This is one of the key questions at the moment in adaptive radiation research. So to wrap it up, multiple parasite infections, they matter for ecology and evolution and prevention of diseases. Infection history could underlie failures in management practices. Parasite infections are potentially maintaining diversity of their hosts. And then all this provide interesting viewpoints in these interactions between parasite diversity, host diversity, and also this potential global disease epidemics, which is currently a very hot topic. And it has been suggested in reports, for example, from the UN and also from researchers in opinion papers that saying that the diversity of other organisms could prevent us, protect us from epidemics. But based on that evidence that I just showed you, I would also add the diversity of other infections to this picture. So it should really be taken into account when considering these approaches. So overall, my research combines several different disciplines from biological and environmental sciences and strongly linked with the strength areas of the department, such as evolution research and sustainable use of natural resources. There's also direct links with the wisdom community, which is currently developing in this university. So overall, I see many of these areas like parasitology and many others listed here, they are integrating more and more. And this is also the development I would like to pursue and develop further regarding the research and teaching in this university. Have more integration and more multidisciplinary approaches to better capture the complexity of natural phenomena. So with that, I would like to acknowledge all my past and present collaborators and especially my current group members, Ines, Roki, and Ville, for their efforts, and our main funder, the Academy of Finland, for their practically continuous funding for the last 10 plus years. And I thank you for your attention. Thank you. Yeah, that's a very good point. So we know something about the mechanisms because the timing, for example, if we change the timing between the infection, it will influence. For example, in this bacteria-fluke interactions, the 4 hours alone is enough already to reduce the virulence, which points to the fact that these flukes might actually open the route for the bacteria into the host body. But if we prolong that time until, say, 5 weeks, we don't see any major effects anymore. So it probably has to do, in this particular case, it has to do with the entry of the bacteria into the fish body. But I'm sure that in In other situations, the host immune system function, it's also very important. But it depends when these infections are taking place. Like in this experiment, we were using very small fish, which don't have really highly developed immune system at yet. But if the fish would be slightly larger, I think we would see the effect of the immune system quite clearly. Yeah, that's true. I mean, in this paper, we show that there are negative associations between these three different traits. So that those salmon populations which are investing more into resistance, like immune system, they have lower capability of avoiding the infection and also tolerating the infection. So there are trade-offs between these different defense traits. But as resistance and tolerance especially are costly, I mean, it's likely that there are trade-offs also between other life history traits. But in this case, we didn't look at those, but instead of just comparing these different defense traits. But very good point. But it has been shown that the resistance is costly, and it's usually done so that they compare growth between totally naive and then immunized individuals, and showing that the immunized individuals have lower growth rate. Usually like that because of the cost of defense. Yeah, we think that there's a biofilm effect. It everything points to that direction, and we are currently analyzing those different conditions for biofilm, microbial diversity, and other aspects like that. At least I haven't come up with any other solution so far. Yeah, I know.
So because they find the similar effects as by elevating their water level in the tanks, so that influences survival. So that's why this biofilm effect or any kind of the contamination, is very attractive explanation. But I think that it's not.
Yeah, well, in that case, we didn't. In this case, we didn't manipulate the water level. So it's if you refer to these enrichment studies previously, they have usually manipulated many other elements as well. So the direction of the water flow, water level, and also these structures in the tank. So far, it hasn't been controlled so that there would be only one treatment per tank. But it's always a combination. So it's difficult to say which of the factors would be the most important. But in this case, we just manipulate the number of stones and the quality of the stones. But you're absolutely right. I mean, it could have an effect.
Okay, good. Let's thank you.